Welcome to Above the Fold here on Real Talk 93.3. I'm your host, Steve Stewart. It's a Thursday, a rainy Thursday. We're here every Tuesday and Thursday at 11 a.m. And don't forget to like us on Facebook at Above the Fold. And you can stream the show live at realtalk93.com. Or you can visit that site and get a podcast. If you can't catch all the show right now, go back and listen. One of the most... Above the Fold is brought to you by Spartan Stoneworks. One of the most common and cost-effective upgrades anyone can make to their home is the kitchen. You're almost guaranteed to increase the value of your home with an updated kitchen, but quality materials like granite, quartz, and marble countertops can get expensive. Well, not when you go with Spartan Stoneworks. Pricing will be lower than anywhere else because they don't mark up the cost of stone materials. The way they see it, since they didn't carve it out of the mountain themselves, they're not going to charge any made-up fees as if they did. Great pricing, amazing craftsmanship, and quick turnaround from an honest local company. Give them a call at 765-2037. That's 765-2037. And we appreciate Spartan Stoneworks' sponsorship of Above the Fold. I hope you enjoyed Tuesday. I wasn't able to get into the studio, so we replayed the interview with Mayor John Daly. I hope you enjoyed that. In the sense of, not that you agree with everything he said, but that you will, you know, gather some information from that interview. I will tell you that, you know, my thoughts coming out of that is obviously when Mr. Daly was elected mayor, you know, he probably had another path that he was going to take with his initiatives. But, you know, things get in the way, and that's when governing, actually, that's how you really evaluate leadership, is when things happen and how they respond. And so, you know, Mayor Daly is going to be sort of evaluated probably in the next year or so based on how he dealt with, you know, a couple of very big issues, the social justice issue and also the pandemic. Although that doesn't fall under his, you know, authority as much as it does the Leon County Commission, still there is the optics of how you deal with that. I think that one of the things that stuck out with me in this interview that I think we should really pay attention to is his, and we've done some stories on this because groups have started to get together to address what they call equality or equity in Tallahassee. And, you know, our back and forth on systemic racism, I think, is something that you should pay attention to. It's something that's going on all over the country. I mean, it was addressed. You just see the federal government taking actions in ways that approached or address systemic racism. And I think that you're going to start to see it here on the local level. And I think what's important is to try to figure out exactly what people mean when they use that word. And that's what I try to get from Mayor Daly. And he answered it pretty honestly, in the sense that, I shouldn't say honestly, he answered it a forward way. You know, he gave an example of redlining for systemic racism. And that's something that happened in the past, but is now, I think his argument and others, is it is having ramifications now. But the question is, how do you deal with that? And that's, when you start to acknowledge that stuff, the next question is, how do you deal with it in a fair and balanced way? And I don't know, those are going to be some tough issues to deal with. But anyway, if you haven't listened to that interview, I think it is instructive on what the priorities of our community are, and more specifically, Mayor Daly. But anyway, on to today's show, we've got a lot of information. We want to talk about jobs in the next segment. You know, there's what happens is we report monthly job reports from our monthly job data from the Florida Department of Economic Opportunity, which gets it from the federal government's Labor Department. And they do their best to basically estimate what the job numbers are. At the end of the year, there are revisions made, and you have to go back, and basically it's usually not a lot, although sometimes it can be depending on the situation. You know, given this situation with the pandemic in 2020, you know, it's probably a lot tougher to estimate exactly specific jobs and unemployment. And so there was a major revision. So we want to go over what that means for Tallahassee. We came out a lot better in the revisions when you compare it to the state and in the nation. But I think it's very interesting to see where we are. You know, we talked about jobs at the end of probably in January, February, we talked about the job movement in the last quarter of last year and how we were comparing it to where we were a year ago. And so those comparisons got better, and we'll talk about that and the implications. And also there's some national news on a couple of economic indicators that have an impact here. One of them has to do with air travel. Another one has to do with residential real estate. You know, a lot of people are talking about how we are seeing price increases here with residential real estate, a high demand for resales, and people are starting to talk real estate bubble. Well, there's a good article in the Wall Street Journal about why this time is a lot different than 2008. And so I just wanted to give you a couple of insights on that, because we are seeing a higher demand for real estate. Prices are going up, and it would, you know, it makes you think about, oh no, is this going to be another real estate bubble? But there's a couple of rational reasons why that may not be the case. So we'll go over those also in the next segment. At the bottom of the hour, we will we're going to have on the phone, calling in, the president of the PBA. We've talked about the negotiations going on between the city and the members of the rank and file PBA. The management PBA side of things have already signed their agreement, and the firefighters resolved the negotiations also recently. So what's left is the rank and file PBA members of the TPD and to get a contract in place. There are some developments, so we'll talk to the president of the PBA, Richard Murphy, who'll be calling in. So we'll have a good 3 or 4, 5 minute update on where those negotiations are, what seems to be the holdup or the major issues, and then we'll talk about that, get some information on that. We'll talk about city commission's got a meeting on Wednesday. Couple of we'll have more information on that on Tuesday, but a couple of items that I've looked at, they just put up the agenda, and that I wanted to highlight, and we'll deal with that in the second hour, maybe the end of the third segment also. But they're going to have a major update on the homeless situation from the Big Bend Continuum of Care group. It's a lot of slides, a lot of information. I'm not sure, it'll be interesting to see this live and see the response from elected officials and try to figure out exactly where we're going with this. I mean, if you remember, there was a vote to have a meeting with Leon County to try to get everybody on the same page. That was voted down 3-2, but I think one of the commissioners that voted against that meeting, Diane Williams Cox, said, listen, when we get more information and we have a chance to get our, I guess, the foundation of where we're going, where what we feel we have, then she'd be happy to vote for that meeting. So maybe this is part of that. So anyway, we'll just sort of touch on that. Another thing is there's going to be an update on a mobile application for documenting law enforcement interactions. So we're digging into that a little bit. I'm not sure how this is going to go over, but it seems like the city is moving forward with it. And it's actually the contact on this is Chief Lawrence Revel. So we'll give you the details on that also. And we'll have a weekly COVID update since we weren't here Tuesday. Big news is there's no hospitalizations in TMH for one day. As I said before, I don't like to look at daily numbers. We look at trends. Definitely hospitalizations are moving down, which is a good thing, but we'll go over those numbers. And also we'll give you some the standard airport numbers that come out every month. We'll look at that in the last segment too. So sit back. If you're not out into the rain, if you're driving, just be careful, because I heard thunder for the first time in a while. And so I guess there's a storm moving through, and I think it's supposed to get cooler tomorrow, but be careful out there. And when we get back, we'll look at the jobs numbers, and it'll be a little bit of good news. So stay tuned. I'm Steve Stewart. You're listening to Above the Fold.
You're as cold as ice. You're willing to sacrifice our love.
Welcome back to Above the Fold here on Real Talk 93.3. I appreciate you joining us today. Want to jump into the jobs numbers. One of the things that's gone on with this pandemic is the debate nationally has been, that Florida has done pretty well in trying to balance the impacts of the mitigation from the pandemic and also keeping businesses open. And, you can debate that. The unemployment numbers came out and it looks like Florida is less than 5%, which is pretty good from a national perspective. Well, it's very good. And, here in Tallahassee, what I'm going to go ahead and do is give you the numbers for January, and then we're going to talk about these revisions and the impact of these revisions. But the January numbers, and the way we do this is compare January 21, 2021 to January 2020. So we have this year, 2021, we have 145,700 people employed. Last year, that number was 150,937. So we're 5,000 in the hole compared to last year. Our labor force this year is, in January, is 153,000. Last year was 156,500. So we're about 3,400 lower in terms of our workforce. The unemployment rate in January 21 is 4.8%, and last January 2020 was 3.5%. So it's a little bit higher. But, you know, we had been reporting that the last quarter of last year that we were about 15,000 jobs below where we had been before the pandemic hit. And as I had mentioned before, at the end of the year, these estimates of employment and unemployment get revised based on more information. Obviously, the longer you get away from something, the more data you get, the easier it is to go back and look and see exactly what it is. So they, the Bureau of Labor Statistics issues revisions to the numbers. And now there's been some controversy about that, and we'll get into that maybe in another show. But the revisions that have come down from above basically show that we were really that Tallahassee, or Leon County, I should say, was never really more than probably 10,000 jobs below where we were pre-pandemic. Now, you know, we reached a low of about 130,000 jobs in April, and then we started climbing out of that, and we hit, basically got up to about 145 and sort of stayed flat for a couple of months. And then we, January, we added jobs, which traditionally we do not. So that goes, I think, is an indicator that this is the resurgence of the business opening back up in January. And so hopefully that'll continue as we get numbers for February, which should be coming out pretty soon, actually. But the point being this is that we're now in pretty good shape. Comparatively, we're 5,000 jobs below, about 5 to 7 below where we were in January of last year. And so that is a much better improvement than what we were seeing in the original data, which was showing really 12 to 15,000 jobs below where we were in the fall of 2019 compared to the fall of 2020. So that's really good news. So we'll have to see where that goes in the next couple of months. But it seems to be positive. Now, if you look at, we were comparing this to the state and how during 2020 unemployment basically started to ramp up in March and April because of the pandemic. And what you can see is if you look at the unemployment rates in Leon County and compare them to the state, they started going up pretty rapidly in March and April. However, Leon County never really exceeded 10% unemployment. It only reached 10% in July. So it reached about 8.5% and then sort of flattened out. Whereas in Florida, as a state as a whole, it rocketed up to 14% and stayed over 10% up through August, whereas Leon County was basically never got up to those double digits or stayed at the double digits very long and then started to head down. And so we started tracking down in August, July and August, and now is where we are now with the 4.8%, and hopefully as the months now in the spring continue, we'll get more people in the workforce, and because there'll be more jobs, and that'll continue to improve. But again, these revisions happen all the time. People get frustrated with them because people, especially like me, who follow this, and you know, you've got to go back and make the changes, and it gives a, you want to give a bet, you know, the picture of what the year looked like. And you know, another thing this tells us is sort of the floor that Leon County has in terms of unemployment. We've got this employment infrastructure that consists of medical field, universities, and state government. And that is really helps us in recessions and in times like we face with the pandemic. There's only, you know, a certain amount of unemployment that we're going to have because of those types of industries. And so I think that this past year has really showed that, which again is very, it's very positive and very desirable for people who are looking for places to move. And that, you know, sort of is a good segue to talk about the real estate market here and in general, you know, as we're seeing around the country, and specifically in areas like Florida and Texas, I mean, real estate prices for the resales of single family homes are really going up. And so there's been some discussion about, well, you know, we're headed for another bubble, and that we saw in 2008, which decimated the economy and took years to get over. But I think there's, if you look and read the trade magazines, there's some reasons why this increase in prices and demand is a little bit different than in 2008. First of all, you know, mortgages are much stricter than they were in 2008. There was they've made a lot of regulatory changes from the mortgage side of things. And that really is one of the issues that really hurt us in 2008 when things were getting out of control. Was how easy it was to get a mortgage. You could get these mortgages with no money down. You could, you know, you could do interest only, and you know, verifying job income was very, very shaky in some of the loans. So that has changed. Another thing that's changed is they're requiring higher down payments when you get a loan, and so that means that, you know, you've got more equity in the house when you move into it. I remember back in that time in 2008 and 2009, one of the allures was, you know, no money down, and you can get right into a house. And so that has changed. But I think one of the bigger changes now is that these prices that are going up is not based on speculation. It's more based on a lack of supply. And so back in 2008, 2009, people were, you know, there were people who were taking money and out of their homes because they had this equity, and they were buying vacant land or beach properties as investments. And this started this cycle of speculating, which drove residential prices up. And, you know, as you know, when speculating happens and you get into this bubble, those prices are not supported by any rational reason. And so other than you're just gambling. And when people finally become aware of that, the prices start to fall. Here, for example, if you just take Leon County, I mean, given our economic outlook, given the people that are moving into Florida and are moving here, there is a real lack of supply of single family residential homes. And, you know, you're hearing stories of, you know, two or three offers on houses, or once it, you know, a house goes on the market, it's sold in a couple of days. You hear stories of people buying houses from out of town without even coming and look at them. Now you hear that all over Florida. And so I think that that's a good sign from the standpoint of not worrying about an economic bubble. Now, obviously, one of the things that, and this is what, you know, local government, state government has to deal with, it does start to address the affordability of housing in the area. Just because it's, you know, it being not a bubble means that it might be something that's here to stay. And so, you know, traditionally, when you start looking at Tallahassee and Leon County, you look at other big cities, and our actual cost of living, I think, if you look at it, is comparatively lower. But now if you start seeing demand and you start seeing our economy heating up, again, that will be good for jobs. It will be good for people that have jobs. But there will be the circumstance, or the unintended circumstance of making things a little bit less affordable for people who are struggling. So you'll have to keep an eye on that. But from an economic standpoint, I think some of the numbers that we're seeing now is really not only good for Florida, but you're starting to see it's really good for Tallahassee. All right, when we get back, we'll talk to the president of the PBA, Richard Murphy, and we'll go over some city commission items that I discussed earlier. So stay tuned. I'm Steve Stewart. You're listening to Above the Fold. All right, welcome back to Above the Fold here on Real Talk 93.3. I'm your host, Steve Stewart. We're here every Tuesday and Thursday at 11 a.m. Don't forget to like us on Facebook at Above the Fold. And remember, you can stream the show live at realtalk93.com. As I said in our opening, we've been following the issue with law enforcement, for all kind of law enforcement issues, but obviously the negotiations between the city of Tallahassee and the rank and file of the Tallahassee Police Department have been front and center on the news. And so we're now joined by the president of PBA, Richard Murphy, to help us understand a little bit more what's going on. Thanks for joining us, Mr. Murphy.
Hey, Steve. How you doing, man? Thanks for having me.
I appreciate you taking the time. First, I wanted you to take a minute or two and just give our listeners sort of the current status or where we are with the negotiations.
Oh, absolutely. Okay, so the contract expired October 1st of this year. We have been working without a contract since then. The city of Tallahassee just recently agreed to go to mediation to see if they can come to a conclusion with this contract, and we're really hoping they'll come to us with a competitive and fair offer.
And so now, in terms of mediation, why don't you talk a little bit about, is mediation binding in the sense that do you have to come out of here with a solution, or is it just a period of time where there's a group that are helping the city and the PBA to try to work out their differences?
No, mediation is not binding. What happens is mediation, we go to a third party, starts working between both the city and us to see if they can come to a resolution for this contract. And again, we're just hoping that this can all be worked out. Typically, we do go to mediation. This has been a frustrating process so far this time, but usually we do go to mediation. So we're just really hoping this can be coming to a conclusion soon.
Okay, you said you were working without a contract since October. So does that mean just the current the parameters of the previous contract just stay in place? Is that how that works?
For most of the contract, but not when it comes to wages or benefits, we will not get a raise until the new contract takes effect.
Okay, so they'll be frozen. And then talk a little bit about, so how does this impact the morale the morale of the rank and file officers?
Well, first of all, I mean, it's a recruiting and retention issue. I mean, staffing, as you know, Steve, is a serious, we're at a crisis level at TPD, and I know that they've recruited a large recruiting class this time, but again, that is not keeping up with the number of officers who are retiring and resigning. We have officers going to agencies and taking less money due to the fact that they're telling me, I don't feel like the city supports me. A contract shows that they support the rank and file officers, and it shows, it gives you stability and then lets you know where you're going to be at in your career.
Okay, so your point is if you have somebody that's actually looking to get a job in law enforcement, they probably, I mean, one of the red flags would be if someone's at an impasse with the negotiating bargaining unit. Is that correct?
Absolutely. I mean, I can tell you from my own experience, when I applied here, first thing I did was go online and look at the contract, look at wages and benefits. And if you're working without a contract, I mean, most officers realize there's a problem if you're working without a contract. And keep in mind, we have officers that are getting poached from TPD by these larger agencies in South Florida all the time, and they make more money than us. They contribute less to their pension. Their take-home pay is more, and that's who we're competing against.
Okay, so, and I think you just mentioned it here, but maybe in a little bit more detail, what from a financial standpoint, what are the biggest issues?
Well, again, we're looking for, we're not, I understand COVID has affected everyone, and we are flexible. Please don't get me wrong, Steve. But that being said, we want to just bring home the money, more money than of the money we earn, if you understand what I'm saying. Our pension contribution is the highest in the state. It's one, if it's not the highest, it's definitely the top three. I mean, and our health care is very high. I mean, you have officers that are brand new officers that are making less than Leon County Sheriff deputies. And we do the bulk of the work in this county, not putting them down. But we do the bulk of the work, and we feel we should be compensated for it with our take-home pay.
Right, and so now the so obviously it comes down to compensation, and then obviously the pension benefits. Talk about just a minute about the environment for law enforcement officers right now. I know again you've talked about not only have you know. I guess law enforcement officers have had to deal with not only the pandemic but the social justice issues. What is the overall morale outlook for the law officer, the officers here in Tallahassee?
Well, I can tell you from our perspective, it's not great, Steve. I'm just going to be honest with you. Staffing is a real issue. I mean, we have less. I'm hearing from 20-year officers that we have less officers on the road now than when they first started 20 years ago. Now, think about that, Steve. The population of Tallahassee has exploded in the last 20 years, and we have less officers on the road now. And us working without a contract, less staffing, we're looking for some leadership from the city manager's office to address these issues. And I'm just going to be honest with you right now, Steve, we're not seeing it.
Okay, so to finish up here, give me the time frame on the mediation. When does it start, and when could we possibly have a, if things were to go well, when would we have a resolution?
Okay, so mediation begins March 24th. Usually, it does take more than one session. And hopefully within 3 weeks to a month, we do come to a resolution. If we do not come to a resolution in mediation, we go to arbitration. That is scheduled right now. I don't know if it's going to be delayed since we decided to go to mediation, but that is scheduled for March 30th, and usually that takes a couple of days and then maybe 30 days for the arbitrator to rule. But keep in mind, in the state of Florida, the arbitrator's ruling is not binding. So an arbitrator could actually come out and say, hey, we believe the PBA should get everything they deserve, and the city goes, hey, well, thanks for letting us know, but we're not going to do that.
All right, so we'll have to reach that, I guess, when we get to that point, when we get to it. Well, listen, Mr. Murphy, thanks for joining us and giving our listeners an update on where we are, and good luck in getting it resolved.
Hey, I do appreciate it, Steve, and definitely want to do this again one day.
All right, thank you, Mr. Murphy. All right, that's Mr. Murphy, president of PBA, giving us a little bit of information on where we stand in terms of working out negotiations with the city. You know, I think, obviously, the firefighters have they were also in negotiations, and it was a difficult negotiation that they got that resolved. The management part of TPD also got their contract resolved. So this is the last one that they've got to deal with, and these are, I believe, three-year contracts. Now, we talked to Mayor Daley when he was on about this issue. And look, the elected officials are not the ones that are at the table negotiating. I'm sure they give, you know, they can give some direction. But they will have to sign off on anything that is negotiated. But I think the point is the way our government is structured, the city manager, and this would be Reese Goad, is responsible for negotiating. Now, Mr. Goad, I'm not sure that he's there personally. I know that he has, we've actually interviewed him on this issue, and I believe that Raul Levin is the contact person there that that is negotiating the specifics of the contract. So, you know, the other thing that, and this is something that we've tried to look into, and I think we really have got to continue to be diligent of this, is the couple of the comments that Mr. Murphy made about officers and staffing. We a few years ago, when we were number one in crime and for a number of years in a row in the state of Florida, Taos Reports was, you know, we broke the story about this ongoing or this upcoming crisis because of the lack of officers and the lack of patrol officers. And, you know, they immediately started to trying to hire more officers, given budgeting more. But that was something that really didn't come to the elected officials' attention until the numbers really got out of control. And so, those statements by Mr. Murphy, I think, are pretty strong, saying that we have less officers on the road now than we had a number of years ago. I think, you know, this might be a good time to go back and look at that again. Now, obviously, you know, from what we're hearing all over the country, you know, crime is some violent crime is up. But not only that, it's the impact of the mitigation efforts for the pandemic have had an impact on how law enforcement does their job. You know, if you remember before the pandemic, it was all about community policing. Well, that comes to a screeching halt when you have a virus and, you know, you start having to limit contact. That's what community policing is. It's contact. You're getting to know the people in the community. You're getting out there. You're being seen. And now that, accompanied with the social justice issues that we were faced with nationally, although, you know, not as impactful here, but it still has an impact. And so the question is, when do we get back to the approach of that everybody signed off on, that we need community policing to keep our crime numbers down? And so that, on top of this negotiation trying to get a contract in place, you know, is not really a good recipe you know, not good timing for all these things to come together. And so hopefully we'll get the contract done, and then we can start getting back into exactly what we're doing from a law enforcement standpoint. And are we going to move back to the community policing model? Is that our goal? So we got to get to those questions, but I think we're going to need to get this contract worked out first. So I'm glad Mr. Murphy could join us, and we tried to get both sides of this issue. We've had, like I said, we've talked to the city manager, we've had the mayor on here. So again, getting you as much information as possible on this important issue. All right, when we get back, we'll wind up the show. We got a lot of stuff to get in the last segment. We'll give you the weekly COVID update, and we'll talk about a couple of the issues that the city commission will be taking up next week. So stay tuned. I'm Steve Stewart. You're listening to Above the Fold.
It's a bitch, girl, but it's gone too far, cause you know it don't matter anyway. Say money, money won't get you too far, get you too far.
All right, welcome back to Above the Fold here on Real Talk 93.3. I'm your host, Steve Stewart. We appreciate Mr. Murphy joining us in the last segment. Again, a lot of good information. Above the Fold is brought to you in part by Epps Decorating Center. If you're a homeowner, you should always be looking for ways to increase the value of your home. But it doesn't always have to be a major project. A fresh coat of paint can transform the interior and exterior of your home in a dramatic way. And I recommend starting with a visit to Epps Decorating Center, Tallahassee's premier Benjamin Moore paint retailer. Whether you need interior or exterior paint, high-end or commercial-grade coatings, Epps Decorating Center is ready to serve you and answer all your questions. Stop by today and get a free paint sample to start your new project. Give them a call, 385-6649. That's 385-6649. We appreciate their sponsorship. All right, I want to touch quickly on the weekly COVID update for Leon County that we do at Tallahassee Reports. We look at we take the daily numbers for the week and give you trends. Look, just to suffice it to say, everything has been headed down since the middle of January. You know, there's a big brouhaha now about TMH had zero COVID patients, I think, one day this week. It's going to fluctuate still. That's one day. But if you look at the numbers, we've had less than 30 hospitalizations over the last week. This compares to the end of January. We were up to 140. And so that's way down. Number of positivity rates are below 3% for a week now, the 7-day average, that is, not just one day. And so that's headed in one good direction. And obviously, the number of cases now are below the 7-day average of 50 for the first time since back in October. Actually, it's lower than, golly, back to in the early summer. So that's the status now that, you know, it's going to be interesting to watch local government and see how they react. I think if you're starting to look at the, you know, job numbers we talked about earlier, you know, business is starting to pick back up. I noticed traffic is picking up, you know, and the people are, I think, are starting to go back to work. You see it at the 8 o'clock hour, or I guess 7:30 to 8 o'clock. You can see it on Thomasville Road, the road I travel. And so we're moving back into this situation where I think things are approaching normal again. So anyway, good news on all fronts, and we'll keep an eye on that. We do have the latest on the airport traffic. There's not a lot to report that's different from previously. I mean, we're down about 60%. But the national story is that there's air travel showing some signs of renewed demand, and so hopefully that will trickle down here locally. I think obviously as our economy starts picking back up, you'll start seeing hopefully that turnaround. I hope to see one of these months where we just break even and start our 12-month average has bottomed out. And that's the key. And hopefully, I think we'll start seeing that, since now we're almost 12 months away from when the pandemic hit. We got to start growing back from that. So looking for that information, and we'll keep you up to date on that. Now I want to pivot to a couple of city commission items, which will be taken up next Wednesday, and we'll get some more detail on the total agenda on Tuesday. But there's two items. One is the, like I talked about earlier, is the issue on the homelessness problem. There's going to be an update from the Big Bend Continuum of Care system performance. And that is, I wanted to read this from the item, and then we'll get into the specifics on Tuesday. But the Big Bend Continuum of Care, the BBCOC, is the federally authorized lead agency that coordinates policy strategies and activities toward ending homelessness in the 8-county Big Bend region. Now, this is something that I did not know. Now, I did know that there was a group of nonprofits, but I didn't know there was one who was basically coordinated all the policies. And so this is something new. And I, again, it takes a crisis sometimes for organizations to really make the headlines. And the purpose of each of these regional COCs is to develop and implement strategies to help end homelessness in their designated area. COCs work in partnership with city and county governments to ensure all resources dedicated to preventing and ending homelessness are allocated in the most effective, efficient, and performance-driven way possible. And so that, again, that paragraph is very weighty in the sense it provides, a line of responsibility for the homelessness issue. And so we're going to really follow up with this and follow it on the Wednesday meeting. Now, the agenda item here is going to provide an overview of the BBCOC system performance report and an update on the 2019 to 2020 trends. I'm not sure. It's going to be interesting to see what comes out of this moving forward, because it looks to me like this is going to be more of a looking back performance report. Obviously, the pandemic has thrown everything out of loop, but now we're getting to a point where, like I said, the numbers are coming down, so we can get back to getting policies in place. Hopefully, and sometimes this happens when you have a crisis, is you come out of this with a better plan than you had going in, and you start addressing an issue that was an issue before, and then you get better results. So we'll keep an eye on that. Now, another item on here which I thought was interesting is this. It's titled "An Update on Mobile Application for Documenting Law Enforcement Interaction." Now, obviously, we've seen, with the proliferation of iPhones, everybody's taping every altercation between law enforcement. Provides a different level of transparency, and the issue that's going to be taken up here. I'm just going to read you the statement of the issue. It says at the next meeting. No, it says here at the June 3rd, 2020 City Commission meeting. That was last year. The City Commission approved funding for staff to develop a mobile application that can be used by citizens to record interactions with law enforcement. City staff have since worked with members of local community organizations, More Than a Name, to gather input and feedback on requirements. Subsequently developed a mobile application that provides a hands-free solution for citizens to record their interactions with law enforcement. The city will be the first in the nation to implement a comprehensive transparency solution of this nature. This effort aligns with the objective 5D of the city's strategic plan to provide state-of-the-art technology to support public safety initiatives. The mobile app will soon be available for download on Google Play Store and the Apple Store. Now, this is in addition, obviously, to the body-worn cameras that were a big deal actually before the social justice issues popped up over the summer. And so, again, there's going to be a lot of video recording going on of every law enforcement step. And you might say immediately this is a good thing because it will provide oversight. And I think that is, that's one positive trait. I think a unintended consequence would be when you start talking about lowering crime with community policing, I think this is maybe a deterrent on engagement from police officers in the community. So you're going to have to really, it's going to be a needle that's going to have to be thread here by local government and local police officers. And so we'll have to, have to get an update on that and see how that goes. It looks like it's going to be ready to go, and we'll see the impact. Again, as we were talking about the homeless issue, I think that the way law enforcement does their job, or the way they did their job before the pandemic, is going to be much different after the pandemic. Some people will say that's a good thing. And I think there's going to be different aspects of the job that are done differently. And I think you're going to have to identify the things that you don't want done differently and put some policies in place to allow those issues to continue. But clearly, this is going to have an impact on how law enforcement does your job. And there's a lot of measurements on how to evaluate that, crime incidents, how much are police officers patrolling and getting out in the neighborhoods. That's all stuff that can be tracked. and we'll make all the effort that we can to be sure that we look at that and see how it's impacted. All right, thanks for joining me today on Above the Fold. Have a great weekend, and we will be back here on Tuesday. I'm Steve Stewart. You've been listening to Above the Fold.